I remember when we first started this whole podcast thing, we just came up with the name God Journey. Some people didn't like it. I think it's perfect. This is not about me. This is not my journey. I am a supporting actor in a greater drama that's going on. This is about him.
Thinking outside the box isn't about whether you go to a meeting or not. It's about breaking free of the obligations of religious performance and living in the adventure of a relationship with God as our Father.
Two real guys talking about life, that's a good thing.
Slinging freedom all over the place and making no apologies, this is The God Journey.
Dude, this is our first ever triple header. We've done double headers.
We've done triple headers before.
No.
I'm thinking we have.
I don't think we've ever done three in a row.
Third in a row.
I'm tired.
This is like work.
It is like
most
work.
Most of the time, this is not work at all. And it's not really that hard. I like talking to you. We never run short of anything.
I know. And we've got so many. I got stacks and stacks of things people have sent us and topics they've given us for podcasts.
Well, send them to Rush Limbaugh. He's got stacks and stacks. He's not one of your favorites.
I don't really want to add to his stack. So you like him, too.
Yes, I do. I'm going to say absolutely, you know, throw whatever you want at me. I enjoy him at times. I really do. I don't always agree with him. I don't like some of his haranguing at times.
So you find his abject arrogance entertaining?
At times, very funny.
I haven't listened to him in years.
I used to remember I used to listen to him at the beginning. It was kind of like, well, that's my side. And now I finally said, I'm not on that side anymore.
No, yeah, I would have to agree.
I'm not liberal. I go the other side.
I migrated to the mass middle. That's where I kind of... I've had so many fun conversations with some of these, like, publisher folks in the publishing world. And they're all kind of getting this whole, like, mass missing middle. This whole thing of the fact of recognizing that there's a growing and growing, growing segment of the population that really doesn't fit in the traditional little characterizations.
A little secular Christian worldview.
And they're going like, you know what? I mean, they're looking at us like, you guys are brilliant. I'm just going like, it's not brilliant. It's just, it's being honest. If you're not trying to promote this one thing and I have my agenda to do this, if you're just honest with where a lot of people are at, they aren't in either of those camps.
No, they're not.
And there's actually a tiny minority that fits on those, I think, mischaracterized, you know, culture war of, you know, just a few folks throwing hand grenades from either side. You're just going like, I think the whole rest of the middle of the population is going, would y'all stop? That's not really helpful.
I hear you.
So.
But going back a couple of podcasts, you know, I would rather spend some time with a kid struggling with his identity and eye makeup than I would an arrogant talk show host.
I'm not trying to defend that.
I didn't think you were, but I'm just saying, again, how we love our sins in certain categories.
Oh, yeah.
Arrogance is entertaining.
Oh, it comes off as authority, pal.
Sexual struggles is perverted. We got to kill it.
We wouldn't think it's arrogant. We think people that act that way, oh, they have a lot of authority.
We're now 3 weeks from that podcast doing this one. 2 weeks is our third.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, from the one that we're talking about. It'll be amazing to see what kind of reaction we get to that. I bet that will really smoke some people. Other people are going to go, rah, rah. And I'm sure, you know, other people are going to start calling me Jane.
Smoking those airways.
It's going to go downhill from here. Yeah, but I'm going to read you this. This is a fairly lengthy note, but you want me to ask you a question, so I'm going to.
Okay.
I'm not sure how much this I'm going to read, but we'll start into it. This is from a recovering religiaholic. That's how he defines himself.
A recovering religiaholic.
I'm going to try and hide most of the facts here because he says he could get fired if people find out that we read his letter on air. So
okay.
He's a denominational official.
Uh-oh.
In a southern denomination.
He's a mucky muck.
Oh, boy. He's one of the top guys. Says, in short, I'm not only involved in the local club, I work for the club headquarters.
He's one of the poobahs.
All that to say, I have been surrounded and even consumed by all the religious entrapments that you and Brad speak about on your podcasts. The ministry is not only my source of income, but has been my passion of life since I can remember. Thanks to you, or Father's work through you, that passion is shifting to my ministry for Jesus, to the person of Jesus. I've always thought of myself as being in a personal relationship with Christ, but it has become more and more evident to me that I have been defining that relationship through the religious activity I've grown up in, rather than true spiritual intimacy. It's good.
Wow.
The problem is that I still love this.
Yeah, that's a significant problem.
Here's the problem. The problem is that I still love this ministry and feel as if God has not released me from it. I feel as if I have been called to be salt and light to those who are still in the performance box. And I don't feel as if I can impact them if I abandon my role. So honestly, I'm not sure if that's my rationalization for not wanting to lose my source of income and a ministry I really enjoy.
Could be.
Or if it is truly what God is leading me to do. But it sounds good, doesn't it?
Equally could be.
A little smile. Yes, there you go. Recently on your podcast, you emphasized that we don't have to leave the local club to leave the box of religious obligation and to live a life of freedom in Christ. But obviously, both of you have chosen to leave the club for the same reason. Could you discuss these reasons? Maybe discuss the dangers of staying in the local club. If your religious club hasn't been abusive and negative, but would have been something you actually enjoyed, or at least parts of it, would you have stayed possibly? Would you have stayed involved possibly?
Oh, this will be interesting.
Is this good?
This will be interesting.
I wrote him back and I said, well, to be honest, neither Brad nor I left. We were thrown out.
But you know what?
By good friends.
Yes, yes. And painful as that was, I do, and I think I mentioned this on the last podcast, there was a point, there was sort of like a watershed where I sort of recognized, what in the world am I doing? All the time. I mean, and just like, I may have been going in one direction, and then all of a sudden the Lord kind of just gently redirects you. But you know what? I've been passionate and sincere all my life. And
yeah,
so I look at that and I'm just going like, you know, I don't question why I was doing what I was doing. I don't, you know, it's like, but when I look at this, all of a sudden there came a point in time where I just sort of recognized like, you know what? I do what I'm doing well. And there's a lot of people that would say they're benefiting from it and they're appreciative of it. But I recognized, gosh, the unforeseen reality is I have, in doing this function, this pastoral role that I was in, I realized I had become, for some, an absolute block in the journey. I was like a surrogate savior. Because they had access and friendship with me that they really could enjoy.
You're a surrogate savior. I'm sitting over here bleeding. Man, I'm having the stigmata appear on my hands. And
you must be holier than I am.
I cut myself shaving this morning and somehow scratched it, and now we've got the blood going.
The reality is I recognized, you know what, somehow in all of my exhorting to try to do what, you know, this whole system is about, people are content in the role that they're at, and they're very happy to have me in my mediator role of fellowship for them. I am their surrogate help to Jesus. It's like I can't talk to God direct, but I can talk to Brad, and I will find that happy and helpful. And I sat there going, like, you know what? I could rationalize this and say, well, at least I'm there to help direct him to Jesus.
Yep.
But for me, I started to just recognize, you know what? I got to do something a little different. I've got to remove myself from this role, not because I'm bad at it, but because I'm preventing people from having to establish the direct point of connection between them and the Lord. In as much as I make it available for them, they won't.
Yeah, and as much as you can say, we used to say this all the time too, and I noticed that same thing. We're trying to say we're not pastors in the traditional sense, but as long as we walked and quacked and looked like duck, people were pretty sure we were a duck. I remember people, when we were trying to disarm that whole thing, you know, we're all the priesthood of believers and all that. People introduce me to their family and say, this is Wayne. He doesn't want us to call him our pastor, but we all know he is. I want to slap you upside the head, but that would have been the wrong spirit, so I didn't do that. Anyway, he goes on. We'll get back to these questions. He said, in my experience, it seems that people are more likely to allow the religious activities of the club to become a substitute for true intimacy and growth of Christ, which we'll come up. I know this is my tendency anyway. When anyone would ask me, how is your relationship with God? My first thought was often to reflect on all the religious activities from the week. I'm going to Bible study weekly. I'm directing this leadership camp. I read my Bible. I pray. I even tithe, et cetera, et cetera. My relationship is good. I rarely thought about the intimacy with the Spirit of Christ abiding in me, real spiritual conversations throughout the day. You know what I mean. To me, that's very parallel to what can happen to a marriage. We can get so caught up in the activities related to being married, i.e. paying bills, taking care of kids, upkeep on the house, that we forget to focus on the marriage itself, the love relationship between one man and one woman. That's not a marriage. It's just living with someone. And that's what I've been doing. I've been living with all the activities associated with being a Christian, but I haven't been living in relationship with Christ. God used you to show me that, jerk. I don't know why that's not plural. I would think it'd be jerks, but thank you, Phil. I love it. Anyway, my wife, my entire family, and closest friends are still very much devoted, even financially dependent on the club. But as a recovering religiaholic, I so often want to be free from it all. I envy you and Brad in that way. Wow. Seems that the closer I grow to Christ, the more disgusted I become with the activities that the club and the club headquarters expect. I tell myself that a drunk wouldn't work in a bar or a gambler shouldn't work in a casino anymore, so then a religiaholic should work for a religious institution. On the other hand, I'm torn because in this position, I honestly feel like I have a perfect platform to influence so many students and student leaders in my state. I've already written curriculum and preached several messages on this subject, which is really starting to have an impact on individuals I'm coming into contact with and through my work. In one of your podcasts, Brad put down the fact that Christian parents were pulling their kids out of the public school there in California as putting the salt back in the shaker. Isn't that what we would be doing if we all separate ourselves from the religious clubs? Aren't they the ones who are going to be crying out, Lord, Lord, do we not preach in your name, cast out demons, perform signs, you'll say, I never knew you? Shouldn't they be warned? Shouldn't they be reached? Shouldn't at least some of us who have found freedom in Christ become all things to all men so that we might save some? A little desperation here trying to save his job, don't you think? After all, isn't that what Paul
did? Very well be.
By continually going to the Judaizers and religious leaders today? Again, I'm not sure if I'm rationalizing or not. I'm just struggling with this. Anyway, I know you well enough from listening to your podcast to know that you're not going to tell me what to do. Though I wish you would. It sure would make it a whole lot easier. I just don't have anyone safe to really talk to about this in around here. I guess I just need someone to bounce things off of. And from time to time, oh, and yes, it does feel good to cuss occasionally.
That's you again.
I know.
That's you, Wayne.
That bad.
You know, I think the reality is...
Hell's okay.
The biggest challenge... I mean, I have a couple different thoughts that are swirling around in this. I think the biggest challenge is... You can stay with a passion, with a desire to be a reformer, but I gotta wrestle with the fact that I think when I recognized that there came a point where I believed God was calling me to something different, I'm not really sure I should have brought a whole bunch of other people on the journey with me or subjected them to what the Lord was saying and doing in me.
Did you take some others with you?
No, I don't know that I did, but I think I brought my angst front and center. I think it's like the whole idea of pouring new wine in an old wineskin. Nowhere does the Bible say the old wineskin's bad or there's something wrong with it. It just says you don't put new wine in that because what you are is going to burst it. And I think I made a real mistake in kind of like, well, new wine's better.
Open your old wine case. I'm going to pour it in, dude.
Well, no. I think in my passion.
So you hooked up a couple of those old wineskins to some fire hydrants of new wine, did you?
I did.
Blasted them a little bit.
And I think I really didn't do them a wonderful service of being a little more selective and recognizing who really is ripe for this discussion, that I can be of assistance to, being that place of sounding board, being a place of that dialogue, and who am I perhaps prematurely injecting my frustrations and the process that I'm trying to go through on someone who really, that isn't where the Lord has them. I mean, I've sort of recognized, it's not like, gee, out of the institution, good, cutting edge. In the institution, bad, stay dead. I mean, I just don't think it's appropriate to look at it from that vantage point because I do know. I got great friends that are sitting on top of, quote, empires that I guess if they're, you know what? I actually think God has them there. They love what they're doing. They're doing it well in the context of what they're doing. I think the fruit and the outcome of it will be limited.
Yeah.
But I don't know that it's evil or wrong. I think
foundations
that they're laying, all that, there could be a lot of wonderful things there.
People would be very surprised how many friends probably we both have, including me, who work for...
Full-time ministry.
Who work for these denominations even, in the denominational offices.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Who are in
cool
sync.
Positions.
Who are in sync with things that we're talking about. And trying to find a way to live it out there in a way that makes sense and doesn't compromise too much. And I think that's what the struggle is here. And I see a man who's changing, who's seeing things with greater freedom. And he's also – and I even told him when I wrote back to him, I said – first of all, I said, I think we will tackle this on a podcast because this would be a fun letter to read.
Right.
But I said, what I want to tell you is, one, we didn't leave it we got kicked out. But you and I have chosen not to go back. We've had opportunities to go back. Okay. We've had numerous job offers to go back.
Multiple draft opportunities.
Yeah. And I don't know that these decisions are made this rationally. What I told him was, I think when you keep, if you keep writing curriculum and you keep encouraging people to live free in Christ.
Yeah, he'll be invited out.
Somebody's going to knock on your door one day and say, you know what, I just don't think this is working out for us. I mean, that likely, if you just live free, I think God kind of resolves who you get to hang out with. If you get to hang out with people who are in a club, who live it pretty relationally, and there's a whole life around that. I mean, I was just in one of those in Wichita. People that are really wrestling with. I mean, they start as a community of house churches, and they end up with a Sunday morning thing, and now they're always wrestling with how effective is this in our journey, and is it helping us? And I love the honesty that's there, and I love the struggle, and I love the fact that they are being taught not to commit your life to here, but go find real ways to live this out with Jesus. I also met with a guy this week I thought was hilarious because he was saying, I got kicked out once. And then a whole group of people came to me and said, we want you to be our king. And it's good to be the king. So he became king again. That was
it's
old.
Good to be the king? He actually said that?
Well, it is. It's good to be the king. Palaces, it's good. It's good to have people who look at you with stars in their eyes.
No.
It is.
No, it's
to
not.
To the flesh. No, I understand
it's
what
not.
You're I understand. I'm hoping you
I
have
can't
that kind
even,
of reaction.
I can't even say. He actually said that.
It's good to be the king. We both said that. I said, it's good to be the king. If your priorities are in your need for a follower.
Oh, yeah. If you're going to have a king in a kingdom and you get a choice of where you're at,
if you want to make
sooner be the king than the serf.
If you want to
okay.
make a predictable income, and somehow stay in full-time service to the king, it is good to be the king.
Yeah, I mean, when he says, you know, I think I'm envious of you and Brad, it's like, you know, part of me kind of went, really? If you have any idea what life outside of the – I mean, that's – I think the journey element for me, and I think this is probably true of more ministerial professionals, I had no concept what I really trusted in. I would have told you when I was getting my nice little six-figure paycheck.
Six?
Yeah.
I read six.
Yeah.
And you left?
Religion is good.
It's good to be the king.
Okay. Religion.
I'm disillusioned.
It's good.
How did we become friends? How did that happen?
Religion.
A six-figure king.
Sure. You
I'm embarrassed now.
Pile it all up in the perks. Yeah.
I'm embarrassed.
Clicked over. The reality is...
embarrassed.
I had no idea. I would have told you. Yeah, I totally trusted Jesus. Totally. I had no concept that take that away and it would then become a white knuckle affair of I've got to trust Jesus. That
was
there. The first time
you, totally.
I recognized I don't trust you one lick at all.
I've never trusted him for a dime. Not one dime. That's true. Absolutely.
And I sat there and I just went, okay, I never had the frame of reference of recognizing what an absolute terrifying confrontation in my life with that reality was. And I can say happily today, I wouldn't trade it for anything for what it's yielding. And you just go like, wow, Lord, I like the challenge of, quote, going face to face. And recognizing the difference for the first time. I couldn't see it from inside. I only had a frame of reference to see it once it was gone. And I think I had the gift of being shoved. You know, I was walking near the cliff and I knew it. Okay.
You were inviting it.
Yeah.
Shove me, I dare you, shove me, shove me.
Yeah, and then I was really disillusioned when they did.
You actually did it. I can't believe it.
I was kidding.
That's how one pastor described it to me. He said it's like you and Brad, you know, we're all walking on the edge of a cliff and somebody threw you off. And I'm standing here having to decide to jump.
It's different.
It's very different.
It's different.
Or it's like people who wade into cold water instead of dive into cold water. You know, he just got one inch at a time.
Yeah,
I'm going to freeze my body.
I mean, I do remember speaking with Kelly and recognizing the road ahead. And I do remember that line in the sand moment that just says, you know what, if we go forward with this could all end, you know, really badly. this could go south really quick. And it was like, what do we do? And I think, you know, for both of us, happily, I had a wife that looked at the situation we were looking at, and her response is, well, I'm not really sure we have a choice. Yes, we do. But there seemed a path of integrity, of our own hearts, of knowing, I think this is what we've been asked. And then compromising of that.
That's what I see with a lot of people on this journey. You don't really get here because you have a better idea and you're going to force it into existence. You really get here in part because I just can't do that anymore. I can't in good conscience. It's a choice between expedience and conscience.
Yeah.
And if you still have a conscience, and I've met people on this journey who do not, who are willing to do anything, hurt anyone, destroy anyone they have to keep their deal alive and functioning and whatever. But if you have a conscience and you just – there's going to come moments. I mean, you see the wrestling here because – financial expedience. He said, I'm financially dependent. So obviously that's not trust. He's financially dependent. He's also got the accolades of the crowd. I mean, he's a star in the construct.
He's a lot of successful. Climbed that corporate ladder.
So people look at him with the little stars in your eyes. That's tough. You got a wife and close friends who are not on your same journey even. They're not ready to ask the questions you're asking.
They're happy with this.
For all those overlays, you're right. We wouldn't even begin to tell you what to do. We wouldn't even begin, but I think you're on a great journey. I love what God's doing in this man's heart. And I would just say, keep following him. Keep living in the integrity of your conscience. And whether
keep living in the integrity
of your conscience.
See, that is probably the wisest admonition that's helpful. Because if you can't be honest there, who knows what this journey is going to end up as?
Yeah, I sold my soul on the second day of full-time ministry.
What?
I did. I was hired by this fellowship. It was a denomination to be an associate pastor. I came out. The second day I'm there, the pastor walks in, senior pastor, and he hands me this denominational membership form to fill out. And, you know, I've not been part of this denomination before, so it's the first. I got to sign this stuff. So I have, you know, name, address, all that stuff, and then I flipped it over on the back, and there was, I think, 15
tenets of
theological points you had to agree on.
Yep.
And I was good with 12 of them, not so good with 3 of them. And so I'm sitting there going, what do I do? I can't, but it's my job. I just got here. And so I walked back into his office. I said, you know, there's 12 of these I'm okay with. There's 3 of them that I'm not. And what do I do about that? And what he said, he looked at me and said, sign that thing. No one even cares what's on the back of it. And I put my name to something that I didn't agree with to save my 2-day-old job. I mean, I've got a 9-day-old marriage, a 2-day-old job. And I signed the thing, and something inside me went, yuck. But you know how fast you bury yuck? You bury yuck pretty fast.
Oh, yeah. Supernatural speed. We have the power to rationalize.
Yeah.
It's a gift. That's a supernatural gift.
And then go, well, I need it. Obviously, God's called me here, so I had to sign that to be here. So, I mean, it's just amazing.
He doesn't made the form either.
You know what I wish I'd done now? I really wish I'd done was to, just like I would do with any contract, I would have crossed out the 3 I disagreed with. I would have initialed it on the side and then said, now you make a decision whether you want me or not.
Wow, that's better, yeah. See, but you're a lot older and a little more wise.
And I know Jesus can provide for me now. I didn't know
that then.
No, I didn't. So the money is, oh, yeah, oh, boy, sign. But that's the integrity of conscience issue. I think God teaches us to walk in the integrity of that. And this the journey this man's on and what he's discovering, and that spiritual life is not about religious activities now, but it's about spiritual intimacy. He's got to become, at some point, less a cheerleader for the religious activities. I mean, if you're going to be honest about it, you're not going to, you know, suit up with the pleated skirt and rah-rah for the activities. And then somebody's going to say, look, what the main thing you do at the denomination is root for the activities.
And raise funds.
So if you're going to live, there you go. Ooh, boy. Pull the knife out of my heart.
Remember the way I raised funds?
I think we've told that here recently. Yeah, you kind of did the non-offering. It'd really be better if you give somewhere else. But if you don't have anywhere else, we can do that here.
If you need the tax deduction, we can provide you the paperwork.
If you really feel called to pay for lights and buildings and staff here, feel free to do it. But I wonder, seriously, what the Church of Jesus Christ would look like in this world if believers simply today started living in the integrity of their conscience.
Oh,
and when you start asking me to do, if you ask me to support what I don't support, I don't support. If you kick me out,
that's your choice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'll live with the reality of whatever happens to me as I live in the reality of that conscience. I think that's really key here. I think that's key for all of us on this journey. Keep living there. Yeah, people aren't going to understand.
There is no other way forward.
Absolutely not.
I mean, you stop doing that, and it doesn't really matter what you're doing. You've already gotten yourself lost.
Yep.
And there's no way to recover other than to get back to the fact of, God, you know, I do think it's a challenge. It takes incredible courage to, quote, be honest with yourself and with God. I think it says the heart is deceitfully wicked. I'm not really afraid of the wicked part. I'm afraid of the fact that I can fake myself out. I can rationalize away for my own self-preservation something that God is challenging me to say, no, I want you to walk forward. But I don't see where the road is. How will I, you know, and it's like, you know, go to a land I will show you. Well, that doesn't seem really smart.
No, it doesn't. But if people are willing to go on that journey, then you don't have to make all these decisions. Are you rationalizing? Might be, might not be. Has God asked you to be there? Maybe, maybe not. If you'll just start, continue to live in the integrity of the conscience God's developing in you now, there will come lines you can't cross. People may pitch you off the cliff for that. They may not. You may still get to work among them in a way that's gracious. I got brothers that I know are doing that well in denominational places, encouraging people to life, even when other people are, even when they're saying to them, listen, you've been in pastoral ministry. This stuff's killing you. You got to get out.
Yeah, I just know that at some juncture, what's a challenge is you look at the religious club and prefer to talk it in that design. That really is a business.
No. Church. No.
No.
Club.
Chair. The religious club is really a business with a membership and an organization and a structure, and they are needing to do a function of drawing people in, helping them feel like they need to pay the dues, and then this thing is furthered. And they may achieve, like the Kiwanis, some great service projects in the community. I mean, without disparaging all of that.
Right, and Jesus may be in that. Jesus may actually be in that, making himself known
for a season. But there may come a time that if you're in a role of steering that, and you're responsible to that, unless you're in agreement with the rest of the guys with the hands on the steering wheel, you got to realize you may be pulling that thing off course of what it's trying to do, and you may find yourself at odds with what that thing is.
Hmm.
And I think that's the challenge where I recognize, gosh, I'm not sure that God called me to start a war in people's hearts. I recognize I'm not sure I had the wisdom of recognizing maybe I should have just rode off into my own little sunset as opposed to sort of, you know, tacking up my little theses on the wall. I know it sounded like something else. but you just go like, you know, walking in the integrity of your own conscience, what is God asking of you in that? And am I being helpful? I recognize, I think, in several environments, in my passion for the new wine I was enjoying, I was trying to share it in context for which it was not helpful to them.
It didn't give grace to the hearer.
That's true.
Yeah, I hear you.
And it took me a while to recognize, gosh, I didn't even think that it was possible that that wasn't a good thing. And that's what I recognized.
Because in our own passion and enthusiasm.
Yeah. At one point, where in the Bible does God call the old wine anything disparaging? Doesn't.
Right.
Doesn't. I had, in my own attitude, disparaged it, and thus I was trying to change it. And you're just going like, oops, I don't think God was really asking that of me.
And then what happens is it blows up.
Yeah.
And people get hurt.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And so, I think if there is some wisdom in the leadership role and function that there is some real responsibility to say, you got to figure that one out before the Lord.
Yeah.
What is it that he's really asking you to do?
And you've got to know, our hearts go out to people like this. I don't think people have a clue. I mean, as hard as some people are against leadership types who abuse them and they get out and call all kinds of things. you don't know what it's like to be in that, where your income and ego and vocation is
your
tied,
whole identity
is tied to managing that machinery.
Yeah.
And when is it, when does it cross that line of becoming more of a cost than is a reality? But I tell folks like that all the time. I wish we could do this for every guy in that kind of thing. If you took 2 year sabbatical, didn't go anywhere for 2 years, didn't get paid, just went on a 2 year sabbatical of getting a real job, working in real life, and not attending a religious club, what you would know after those 2 years.
He can't even imagine.
He can't even imagine. I mean, he sees a lot from where he stands.
Right.
You can't imagine when how blind you are to fixing all those institutional demands and maintain how you can't imagine how seductive that is and how you can't even see it until you look back 2 years later and you go, I did what? I really? And the change of perspective to see God's life in the real world with real people outside of those four walls and that program. Oh, gosh. And then I got to read this.
Okay.
Unless you want me to comment?
Yeah.
Because this is the best letter ever.
When you grow up in that whole religious structure and you go to the religious training institution and you've never spent any time actually living like all the people you're going to be exhorting, I think there's a profound disservice because most of those guys, they're absolutely terrified. What else? I mean, I don't know how many conversations I've had with pastors that just look at me and they're being absolutely honest in their fear.
Yep.
What else can I do?
Yeah, I'm only trained for this. But you know what I found? I think you've seen this too. People who have left it find incredible jobs, creative outlets, incredible ways God takes care of people. And I think this is true. The world puts a greater value on what it takes to pastor a group of people and be a management thing in a group of hundreds of people, volunteers. They put great priority on this. Teachers, trainers, management people, because in this day and age,
incredible skills.
If you just show up in this day and age, be responsible and have integrity, man, they'll climb all over to find you because it's not in the workforce. It really is. And I've heard amazing ways God has taken. I was with a guy this week in Wichita. I'd been on staff at one of the major congregations in the world. And, boy, told me some ugly things you don't want to know. But anyway, after all that talk, I can't imagine. I just dropped in my mailbox this morning. It had nothing to do with the podcast, to be honest. It's because she got a hold of the Jake Colson book, So You Don't Want to Go to Church Anymore. And I'm just going to read you her story. It's a little bit long. I can't think of any better way to end this discussion, this letter. My day got interrupted with your book. A longtime friend told me I should download it, which I did in the London airport on my way back to the bush of Sudan, where I live. I got caught up in your story, and my tissue box became my friend. I'm a simple little white girl from Florida who is now in Sudan taking in orphaned children to live with her. I was really relieved when Jesus called me to move to the Sudan and out of the West. When I got here, I realized I was 10 times more religious than anything I have ever seen, and the Christian South is an absolute cartoon mockery. As caricature of all the things of the religious system called Christianity, with all the avarice it breeds, leaders who actually know Jesus estimate maybe only 3% of his people actually know who Jesus is really. I've heard that same similar statistic. When I was in the simple church movement in the West with campus churches a few months into it, I realized I was training people how to plant churches so nicely they could do it without God. And a few months more, it seemed to me we were producing another box we tried to contain God in and saying our box was better than the other boxes. Now, after nearing 2 years in the war-torn bush of Central Africa, I don't really give a rip whether it is a house church or legacy church or cell church or open church, a sitting room, a sanctuary, or a stadium. If people are growing in Jesus, walking in love with one another, and being the face of his love to the world around them, it is just about love and life and him. I don't want to have to figure out whether I should embrace the system, conform, reform, or vacate. I don't have time. Other things are too precious. I just want to do what he is doing and love people. I don't want to debate what is the right way to have a church. I don't give a rip because it all can become a box and a prison if it's not filled with his life anyway. So why can't we all just focus on him and fall in love with him and love the people around us? I don't want to figure it all out. I can't. I was just holding a dying woman in my arms in the hospital here whose family will not feed her or help her because the stench of rotting flesh is too bad and she soils herself and people are arguing if they should meet in homes or buildings. Last week, a woman Last week a blind woman saw. This week another woman lay dying in my arms. I cannot figure it out. I can't even try anymore. If I can't embrace his mystery and love beyond my little understanding, I will limit the place I give to his majesty to be revealed in and through my life. Meet under a tree, rent a cathedral, go on a hike with your family, but love people. Learn about love. Learn of him. Live in him. Have an encounter with him. Live in the encounter with him. Be his encounter to those around you. That's what he said to me last night. Can't we just do that? I don't have any answers or anything except a heart cry to love each person he sets in front of me and to stay in his presence because I love him more than I love anything. He is my life. Thank you for describing the one I love more than life so beautifully and accurately. It means a lot. I met him face to face when I was 7, and very few. And I have read very few or actually heard anyone describe the one who captured my heart as a little girl. You have. Thank you.
That's awesome.
Isn't that a letter? Thank you for joining us today on The God Journey. If you'd like to participate in the conversation, you may do so at our website, thegodjourney.com.